Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 1st, 2016, and you're listening to the best poker cast of this year. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Wow, another year, buddy.
Yeah, it's, wow, it doesn't feel any different than 2015.
Oh, man. I tell you, though, you start adding up the years, and it's like we're in our, I mean, we published in 2008. So 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. I mean, we were in our ninth year of publishing, if you think about it now.
Yeah, it's very true.
You know, it's crazy. In our 11th or 12th year of the show, like it's our 11th year of the show. But, man, time is just flying. Somebody was emailing me this week about, you know, they don't feel good. They're up north and they've got some cold that's going around or something. And he's like, I'm out of sick days. And I'm like, oh, man, that sucks. I'm like, what's that like? I forget. If I'm sick now, I call myself and say, hey, I'm not coming in today. You know, it's weird to not work for the man for so long, you know?
No, it's funny to think about how so much has changed, but so much hasn't. I mean, I'm on my second or fourth or eighth, it doesn't really matter, binge-watching of West Wing now.
Yeah.
And I'm watching season two, and at the end, you know, it has little credits, and like, copyright 2001. 14, and I guess technically 15 years ago now.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's still new, so.
Yeah.
Kind of like us. We probably still sound the same way we did back when we were idiots.
We don't look the same, though.
That's for sure.
We do not look the same.
There's a lot more of me to love now. All right, so, you know, I always like when people on Facebook start sharing anything that Nolan Dalla has to say. Mm-hmm. And, so, because he always goes on these big rants, and
yeah.
You know, he's the media director for the World Series of Poker, but always clear to say that his opinions are his own.
Right.
The World Series. And so this week he was railing on this news that came out about Daniel Negreanu. So the deal is Daniel Negreanu tweeted that Bank of America has closed his bank accounts, and his MasterCard provider has closed his credit card, presumably because of something called Operation Choke Point. Sounds like a movie, actually.
I know.
A Department of Justice initiative to more closely monitor transactions involving unsavory industries. Unsavory is my word there, but that's kind of what it was. You look at the list of industries, it's, you know, escort services and pawn shops and Ponzi schemes and, of course, online gambling.
Yeah.
So there's been no confirmation that I've seen from Bank of America or MasterCard that they actually did close these accounts. I'm not saying Dana lied, but, you know, we're just saying. No confirmation there, and we certainly don't know for sure whether it's because of Operation Choke Point, but other players, as soon as he tweeted this, came out and said, yep, my bank account's been closed as well.
Yeah, I read the article, and there were quite a few players who were saying they've gone through this recently, and then even in the past, too, and you know, I just don't know what to believe about this. You know, even if it's all true, it's hard to believe that they can just blankly do it without notifying you. You know what I mean? It's like it's a business. There still needs to be some sort of protocol in place that will contact the person and say, hey, listen, this is part of the DOJ or something, and we need to know what you do for a living. I need you to come in, have an interview. There needs to be something done without just, we're just closing your account and screwing your credit for the next 4 weeks because you have no idea we did this or, you know, or something. It's just not right.
Well, that's the biggest argument people have, is that this choke point, not just for poker players, but everybody, kind of skips over the whole due process part, which is kind of important, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, do you really get your money from an escort service? Oh, no, here's how I make my money. Oh, okay, great, thanks. We'll reinstate. Nope, that doesn't happen. You're presumed guilty until you can prove you're innocent at a later date. But, you know, you look at that list, too, and I guess it's not really an official list. I didn't see the list on Department of Justice. Obviously, I don't think there probably is a list on the Department of Justice website, right? But it said online gambling. It didn't say gambling. So, you know, I mean, I didn't post the link to Nolan Bell's article for you to read. I'm sorry. But he's like, you know, hey, even in Vegas, when I go to the bank, sometimes I get that look. I get that look from the teller. And he's like, it's Vegas.
Yeah.
Everybody here makes their money off gambling in one form or the other. So, you know, it's interesting to me. I wonder, let's assume for a minute that it's all true, right? Is it because that Daniel's a Poker Stars pro? He's actually Canadian, too, so yeah. It's legal to play, or I guess quasi-legal to play on my poker up there. So, you know, doesn't mean... I guess it's Bank of America. Maybe it's his American accounts and not... Maybe his Bank of Canada accounts are still good. I don't know. But, you know, how do you pick and choose who to go after?
And how did they even know that about Daniel Negreanu, that he was, because it was PokerStars? Because the checks that he's depositing at PokerStars on him, and that's what raised the flag? I mean, if you know who Daniel Negreanu is, then you know that he's not making his money, that it's possible that he's making this money just at the tables in the real poker room where it's legal to gamble. So how are you taking it upon yourself to just shut down his account without talking to him? Well, or if you know who he is anyway.
And beyond that, there's no such thing as a check from PokerStars. I mean, back when they sponsored our show, I never got a check that said PokerStars on it. It was always some different company name, right? That looked perfectly not poker-like.
Although now, I think now they would have legitimate PokerStars stuff.
Well, it's interesting because now the company is Amaya Gaming, so they might have, you know, subsidiaries and things like that that don't say gaming. But this is interesting because when we changed our company name, you know, we ran a publishing when we started, right?
Yeah.
And got a bank account, no problem. And then when I went into the bank to say, hey, we changed our company name to Antia Poker Media, all of a sudden they're like, oh, tell me about what you do again.
Yeah.
Like, huh? I haven't changed what I do. And they're like, well, you don't, you know, you're not involved in the actual playing of poker, are you? And I'm like, no. And I made a big deal to our bank, so probably because of all this.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
It's so ridiculous.
Very, very weird, though. So, you know, again, from a player, I mean, a consumer point of view, I mean, obviously you can go find another bank that's not going to care, right? But we're talking about Bank of America. I mean, the bigger banks you somewhat have a little bit more faith in, right, than Joe's Discount Banking, you know, on the other side of town, right? So, you know, you'd like to be able to keep your banking at a long-term, stable-ish bank, but...
Well, the other thing, too, is I read some of the comments from the other guys, and then I think Negreanu said, all right, I'm headed over to Chase, and then they're like, as soon as Chase finds out who you are, they're doing the same thing to you.
Yeah, probably.
You know? So it's possible. I think it's just, like you said, without due process, you know, people like to just talk about how everything is freedom in this country and everything, but yet they're not free to have an account, at least without getting due process. That's just not right.
Right.
That's just not right.
All right, so here's a little bit more fun. You know, I'm a big history geek, so I like anything about history or how things happened back in the back, right? So I thought this was really interesting. So we've all heard Kenny Rogers, the gambler, and probably way more than we've ever wanted now, thanks to that, you know, Geico commercial, right?
Yeah.
Just finally out of rotation now. But how many of you know the history of how the song came about? A recent King Feature Syndicate article by poker enthusiast Chuck Blount gives us that story. Turns out Rogers is a Texas native and had struck up a friendship with one Amarillo Slim Preston. And in 1978, Rogers was at the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas when he asked casino mogul Steve Wynn and Slim to take a look at some lyrics written by a guy named Don Schlitz. And Rogers had a basic idea of poker, even though he hadn't heard of the Hold'em at the time, which is kind of funny, back in 78. I don't know how many people actually heard of it, right? So Slim suggested a line about knowing when to quit, which Rogers took to heart and changed the lyrics to what is ingrained in our brains to this day.
Yeah, I'm going
to
be singing this the rest of the day. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, a little earworm, right? Gotta know when to hold 'em. Know when to fold 'em.
Everyone knows this story, Scott. I don't know
when to walk away, right?
We all know this story.
Thanks to Slim. Yeah, sure you did, right?
Oh, man, that's pretty crazy. The fact that he didn't know hold 'em and really didn't know anything about quitting And so now the two words that are most vital to the damn song, hold 'em and fold 'em, are from, you know, Slim. That's pretty funny.
My good friend, my best friend Amy, she who I go to all concerts with, right? She actually has an acquaintance that does PR for Kenny Rogers, so she got to go back in the green room with him last week.
Wow!
And her husband got pictures with
him. Is the acquaintance the you know, the surgeon that does all of his plastic surgery? Or?
No, that's a good question. I did ask her whether he had Kenny Rogers roasters. Green room.
But. Remember the yeah. Seinfeld episode?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was brilliant. But I remember when I worked for TBT back when we first started the show, Tampa Bay Times at the time is what it was known as. But then, of course, they took over as a newspaper. But we had to do like the five worst plastic surgeries of 2007 or something. And there was one of him, and you know he looks fine now because it's all settled in and everything. But when it started. Oh man, he looked like, you know, like when those clowns are taking the balloons and they're folding them for the kids and they're making them, and before they're done with it, you're looking at it like, what is this thing? And then he finally makes the right twist and everything, and you figure out it's a little French poodle or something. But before he finishes that last twist, you're kind of like, what is going on with this thing? It's the same thing with his face. I couldn't believe how bad he looked.
And, did Jennifer Grey make that list?
I don't know, 2007, so. I'm not sure she had her nose done.
Bad dumb, plastic surgery. That's a. I mean, she looks gorgeous now, and I always think she had. But
she don't recognize her anymore.
Yeah. So I was watching last week the backstory of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Right.
Yeah.
Very interesting, actually, by the way. And so the first interview is Matthew Broderick, and the second interview is with this woman, no name on the screen, and I'm like, who is this? And then she kept coming on the screen, and by the fourth time, they finally put Jennifer Grey there. I'm like, oh my gosh! I mean, I'd heard that she had plastic surgery, but I didn't know that they just took everything she had and threw it away and gave her a whole brand new body. Look.
Yeah, she looked, and she was on that Dancing with the Stars,
yeah, Dancing
or
the
something,
Stars,
too.
And which I found out later after I Googled all this. So.
Yeah, but I agree. Well, she was on Friends, an episode when her nose was, I think her nose was fixed then. I can't remember now, but yeah, you look at her and you're
fixed.
Like, that was the whole, you know, that was like
sure,
her thing, you know? I mean, that was her thing, it was the nose.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, you don't recognize
it.
I mean, I went right after the party, same with Kenny Rogers, walks into the room and, hey, how's it going, Jim? Who are you? Remember me? I'm Kenny. This is my friend Jennifer. I don't know who you guys are.
Okay, any updates? Inn of the Mountain Gods in New Mexico and Parks Casino near Philadelphia are the latest poker venues to commit to hosting an event for Annie Up's Restock the Shelves charity food bank initiative with Bouchard Optics on January 18th. I think our fans
Stock
know about all this stuff now. We could just say for Restock the Shelves.
Reputation.
Killing me. And many participating rooms have added event details, including extra chips and raffle tickets for donations of food or cash. Get details on all of our restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team Annie Up by visiting AnnieUpMagazine.com/restock and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event, too. Don't forget that we've migrated our Annie Up group discussions to PokerRadius.com. It's a great poker networking site. Basic memberships are free. Most people know this. But you can get access to the Annie Up forums, and upgrade your membership will get you access to discounts on poker products and automatic entries to contests. So I'm always posting the recap there every week from our show, so you can get in there and talk about it. So, you know, it's pretty well organized over there, too. You're on there a lot.
Yeah, we check it every morning.
Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if you haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It comes from Brian.
Like, full night's sleep last night, buddy?
I'm kind of tired. Yeah, it's New Year's Day. It was New Year's Eve when we were, you know, I was out late drinking the Corbel.
Yeah, you had that little milk toast at midnight.
Yeah, and then I switched to Cristal. You know, it was just too much for me. All right, so this comes from Brian. He says, are you allowed to document your hand play during a live tournament? If I decide to go all in and want to document the flop turn, etc., and the villain's hand via a voice recorder using my cell phone, is that against the rules? I called the Borgata and they told me no go. Not even allowed an S note pen, I don't even know what that is, on my phone. I'm thinking the best solution is just write it down on a piece of paper because they are funny with cell phone rules.
Not only is this the best solution, it's really kind of the only solution. unless you have a photographic memory.
Yeah.
I mean, progress is that we're allowed to at least have phones at the table now. But I can't imagine a day when we're actually going to be able to use beyond the phones in the middle of the hand. That's why, you know, usually dealers say, hey, you got to be off it. Because no one knows what you're doing. I mean, you could be obviously logging in your hands, which is no problem at all. I mean, no one has a problem with you doing that. They just don't know when you're on your phone that's what you're doing, even if you tell them. You know,
right.
They got to be sure to protect the integrity of the game and that you're not, you know, texting the guy at the next table what's going on there. So, I mean, I guess your options, obviously, writing it down is good, or stepping away from the table and running right after the hand. And if you want to use your phone and record it, you can do that.
That's what I was just going to say. That's what, if you all remember Gus Hansen's book, One Hand at a Time or whatever, when he won the tournament, the Aussie Millions, that's what he did. And they had footage of him doing it when they had it on TV, where as soon as the hand was over, he stood up, grabbed his little pocket digital recorder, and then spoke into it. And explained all while it was fresh in his memory everything that happened on the hand, from what position he was in, what cards he had, how much he raised or whatever, how much everyone else did, what they did, what the cards were, and then what the showdown was, or whatever, how much the pot was. He recorded every hand that way. If it was a fold or whatever, I think he didn't do anything. But if it was some significant, if there was any kind of action at all that involved him, he got up with a little hand recorder when the hand was over and just stepped away for a second, set it into the recorder, then sat back down. So. I mean, that's something you could do, but do you really want to get up 60, 70 times during a tournament to do that? I don't know, but really, Scott's got it right. It's kind of weird. I mean, you would think, you know, by now, you know, especially if you're sitting next to you and stuff, it's not like you're getting somebody to call in details to the guy's hand next to you, or, you know, I think we got to catch up with the technology, but until they do, that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, you also don't need to do a voice recorder. I mean, unless that's which how you want it. I mean, you can also type it into your phone as soon as it's over. You know, you're allowed to be typing on your phone until you actually have a hand, and you can always put your phone down, check your hand, and if you fold, then pick it back up and finish the. So I think there's a way to do it. Really, the only problem you're really going to have is you get on a good run of cards. It's going to be tough to keep up with it at that point. But again, I'm not sure you really care at that point, right? So. And I don't think I've ever been at a table where somebody's pulled out their little notepad and while we're dealing out the river is furiously writing down the hand either. I've never actually seen that.
No.
I don't think anybody would say anything other than, you know, I think you're a little bit weird.
But, yeah, just try to, if you can commit it to memory for just 30 seconds, you know, when it's finally over, then you sit back down and type it quickly into your phone. Or, you know, a lot of people use a voice recorder just because it's faster to say it than it is to type it. Most of us, you know, some teenagers can fly through it, but for me to say it'd be a lot easier. But until they catch up with technology and give you some sort of leeway to do it, that's what you're probably going to be forced to do. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Our buddy Vic G, he's really cranking out some stuff for us lately.
And guy for content.
Yeah, he says, we were in a 1-2 no-limit hold'em cash game. A friend of mine is getting a massage at the table. She's heads up on the river and bets $42. The opponent counts out the $42 call, then asks the dealer if she's all in, since she has her hands in front of her chips. She lifts her hand, revealing two $5 chips. It's obvious to me that she's saving these for the masseuse. The opponent adds two more $5 chips to his bet and then slides the stack into the pot. It's obvious he intends to raise, but does not say anything. He just bets $52. In this room, you must raise at least 50% for it to be considered a valid raise, and then you'd have to add the missing chips to complete the min raise. Anything less is just a call. The dealer motions to my friend and says he put you all in. And in parentheses, he says, let me rant here. I hate this saying. No one can put you all in except yourself. All right, fair enough.
Appreciate it, brother.
Yeah. So he says, is this a legal $10 raise? Yes, he intended to raise, but so do players who string bet. And those aren't legal raises, even though we know the player's intention. Secondly, what is my responsibility? If I thought that this wasn't a valid raise, should I have spoken up? I wasn't in the hand, though I was dealt in, and wasn't 100% sure it was a legal raise. Should someone have challenged the raise, and if not, what could have been done after the fact before the pot was pushed?
All right, Elliot says, you stated the action was down to heads up on the final betting round. For the Razor to raise with a full bet on top of the current bet to him, $42, would be for posterity, as there's only $10 of action to be had in that very specific situation. The dealer should have asked the racing player what he was trying to do instead of making the amateurish and annoying he put you all in statement to your friend. Either way, the race should stand in that spot. If there are more players active or more chips in play at the time or both, the decision can change and probably does so. As for your responsibility for speaking up, all players should speak up any time an error might have been made. Fair enforcement of the rules in the game at all times is in everyone's best interest.
Yeah, the key here is heads up. He doesn't have to make it double the bet. All he's got to do is put what you have in. If he wants to raise, that's like saying because he doesn't have enough, then he wouldn't be able to raise because the other person doesn't have any more money. This isn't television. That's how it goes. If you have $10 left and your head's up, all that person has to do is put $10 more in than what your raise was or your bet was. So,
yeah, so a couple things. One, it's very odd in this room that it's 50% for a valid raise. You know, TDA rules are very clear that that's only in a limit game, and this is no limit game. No limit game is 100%. So right. I want to clarify that, which is probably part of the confusion here. But what I kind of told Vic is, hey, Vic, is this what you want to take the stand on?
Yeah.
You know, technically you are correct. The guy should not have, in a technical sense, if he wanted to raise, he should have put $84 in. But really all that would have done, as Elliot said, if it would be for posterity, because then you'd have to take 32 of that back out after the other opponent calls. So really, this is just an efficiency.
It's semantics, yeah.
Yeah, it's completely different than his. You know, he equated to the string bet, and I don't think that's correct. String bet, you're gauging somebody's reaction before you complete your bet.
Right.
That's cheating. You know, here you're just being efficient. You're like, all right, the only amount of money that person could put in is $10 more, so I'm going to put $10 more in the bet, and we're off to the races, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I get why he's kind of annoyed. There's a lot of things in here that are annoying, but this is really not a thing I think you should get annoyed about.
Yeah, this passes as nothing to me. I see this all the time. This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to put $10 on top. It just makes it easier. And the other thing, too, is even if there were other people in the hand with them at this time, if they had less than the 42 that she had put out there or less than the 52 that he was going to need to put out there, you know what I mean? He could still just put 52 out because it still covers everybody else who's in the hand still. You know what I mean? So, I mean, even then, it's still not a problem.
I mean,
really.
At that point, maybe it slows down the game a little bit because now the dealer has to verify
that,
you know, instead of saying it's, you know, that's a little different story. But here, we've already had a communication with the other player.
Yeah.
You know, how much do you have left? Okay, $10. Here you go. So there wasn't anything the dealer needed to do here, so you were just saving time.
Yeah.
If you actually put the whole 84 in, then it would have slowed the game down. So, and the other thing, too, and Vic and I had a good conversation about this, too. There's nothing obvious about saving these two $5 chips for the masseuse. You know, if you've got money in play, you've got money in play.
Right.
So if you're going to use that to tip the, or pay the masseuse, or tip the masseuse, or tip the cocktail waitress, or whatever, then you do that before you get involved in the hand.
Yeah.
Once that hand starts, that money should be good. Now, I know a lot of rooms have different rules on this, that you're allowed to take X amount off the table to pay for your food or beverage. That. I still think it's bad form to do it when you're in the middle of a hand, especially in a table stakes game.
Yes.
Like this. So,
yes.
You know, at that point, I would never, at that point, you know, if I had no more money in my wallet at the beginning of the hand, I would be sure I took I would pay or whatever, or let everybody know, hey, I need to pay this girl. Because once you get in the hand, you can't be like, okay, oh, here's 10 out of here, and then I call. Yeah. I've seen that happen all the time, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Really frustrating.
Yep, you're absolutely right. It's definitely bad form. I mean, we got into a huge argument in our home game once because everybody wanted to keep taking money out of the pot for the horse racing, and I'm not part of the horse racing. I'm like, hello, you guys, if you keep doing this every 5 minutes, you're going to have like 10 bucks in the middle that I could possibly win from you that you're not letting me win now.
No,
take it out of your pocket.
We were letting you win if you would have played the horse
game. Yeah, well, I didn't want to play the horse game.
Well, then that was your choice.
All right, I'll tell you what. When we're all done with the home game next time, take all your cash and bring it down to the bowling lanes with me, and you have to participate in the bowling wager that I want to make against you. And if you don't want to do it, tough.
Yeah, that's fine. You know. You're going to be the only one that wants to do that. So.
Yeah, I'm the only one. No, Eric would want to, I think, if we had Eric in the game. Hey, we got a little cause for celebration here. This is the 100th episode for O'Malley.
Woo!
Malcolm O'Malley, thank you very much. 100 episodes, congratulations. This is pretty huge.
Looking forward to the next 1,000.
Next 1,000. You didn't even go to the 100. 1,000. Well, all right, O'Malley, here's your shining moment, part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $1, $2 Pot Limit Omaha 8 game. That's right, no more circus show. The table is full of experienced players as we sit 8-handed. We bought in for 200 and have pretty much broke even for the night. The under the gun folds, the plus one folds, and we are in the MP with the ace of hearts, jack of spades, jack of diamonds, deuce of hearts. This is a very good hand, and we're going to make our standard raise. Playing with the completed small blind, we make it $6 to go. It's folded to the button. Who calls? Both blinds fold, and we go to a flop. The button is an experienced player, but gets into trouble by calling too often and not being aggressive often enough. He started the hand with $250. There's $15 in the pot, and the flop is a great one. The jack of hearts, six of hearts, five of clubs comes down. It's important to bet your draws in Pot Limit Omaha 8 when you have them, but this flop really doesn't scare me at all. We have the nut high, a redraw to the nut flush, or a boat, and a draw to the nut low. We couldn't ask for anything more than this. The only question now is, what to bet? I think two-thirds pot is good here. This is a situation where we want to start building a pot, but don't want to scare the opponent away. We're hoping he has something like ace tray and a propensity for overcalling. We bet $10, and our opponent makes the call. With $35 in the pot, the turn is the queen of clubs. We no longer have the nut high, but we are in very good shape. We decide to make a $20 bet into the pot. But this time, our opponent raises us to $50. What on earth did he pick up here? And more importantly, what's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And our favorite movie listener, Steven Seagal, is back. Actually, it's just Steve Seagal, but you know, we like to call him Steven.
Yeah.
All right, so here he goes. He says, this situation happened, he says, to many poker players in the casino. Wow, interesting. It's actually a hand between his friend and a villain at a 1-2-no-limit game in Philadelphia. And he says, at this point, he's up to $600. The villain is similar in chips. The villain is a solid player. My friend has seen him at the casino on multiple occasions, sometimes playing 2-5. All right, so Dylan, right. Obviously a solid player, playing down today for whatever reason.
All right.
In the middle, let's see, an early position. Our hero looks down at pocket tens.
Okay, this is a situation, or is this a hand of the week?
It's kind of a situation, hand of the week, but we'll do it hand of the week, and then we'll switch the situation.
All right. Well, it's I think it's poignant that you picked a pocket tens hand while Danny Negreanu is one of our major subjects, because he always says it's just tens. But he feels that way afterward, not pre-flop. He's going to raise a pocket 10, so I'll raise. You know, in our 1-2 experience, generally...
our little world.
Yeah, a raise with 1-2 as the blinds is about $12 or so. So I'd probably make it about 12. Again, I don't know. You know, I have a huge stack here, 600 in a 1-2 game. That's a lot of cash.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the other guys that were getting involved with is going to be deep, too, so I'm going to... You know, but I'm going to make it 12 because I don't know he's going to be involved with me until I see it. So,
yeah, my standard raise is 10, so I'm going to make it.
Yeah,
10.
Yeah, 10 to 12.
Right. 10 to 12. All right. Our hero made it 13, so he showed us.
Oh yeah.
Gets two callers, including the villain who is on the button. Flop comes 4-9-9 with two hearts. We don't know whether one of our tens is a heart. Let's just assume it's not, because that would probably be pointed out. Correct.
Yeah, probably.
Looks like we are first to X.
So there's four people in this hand, us and three other people, right?
That is correct.
All right, so that means there's 52 in the pot, give or take, before the rake, because we're in a casino. Yeah. So about 50 in the pot. It's a pretty good flop for us. I mean, generally, unders is fantastic. And when there's a pair on the board, generally that 9 is not out. Not that I'm saying it's not out, but...
It's less likely than it's
less
out.
Likely that the 9 is somebody's flop trips on you. I don't know, $50 in the pot, I think I might make a nice $35 bet, maybe.
Okay.
That seems fair. I'm not going to check. There's two hearts, too. You want to protect a little, too, if you can.
Yeah, I think at least 25. I think anywhere from 25 up to the pot.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what our villain bets. Our hero, sorry. Right. Our hero bets out $25. The villain calls, and everyone else folds. So now we're heads up.
All right, one caller, and it's 100 in the pot now.
Yep. Turn is a 9.
Wow.
Four now is 4999.
Wow.
Worst first act again.
Well, I mean, we got to still like this. I mean, I don't... I guess we could put him on a 9 here, but it's so rare that somebody's got quads against you, so really the only hand you're losing to is any higher pair than yours, and a lot of times in a game like this with that many callers, you would think the villain who's on the button would have re-raised. So, you think you're good here. I would think I'm good. I think I'm betting, so...
I'll say this. This card changes nothing.
Yeah, I don't think it changes anything. So
because all the hands that can beat us were beating us on the flop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He even had a 9, and now he's got quads.
Yeah.
He was beating us then. And if he has jacks, queens, or kings, or aces, he's got his beat.
The only thing it changes is if somebody had pocket fours. Now we're beating them. That's it.
That's true. That is true.
But I'm not worried about that. So, I'd bet 65.
I guess the other thing, too, is now we can't beat the trips, right? So we were behind. Let's say he had a random 9, ace 9 or something, right?
Right, so if a 10 comes, we still lose.
Right. A 10, we would win had this 9 not come out. Now that's done, right?
Right. It's such a rarity.
Changes, but I think those are all tiny details.
Right.
Generally speaking, this hand hasn't changed for me.
Right. Well, we always tend to talk about two-thirds of the pot on the turn, so 65's that. So I'd bet 60, 65, something like that.
I wonder if this is one of the scenarios where now you check for pot control.
He's going to bet if he's got you beat. He's going to bet
right,
anyway,
that's part
I
of
think.
The pot control, right?
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, if you're worried about him raising
he raises
you.
Us, now the pot gets a little bit out of control, and we don't know where we are.
Yeah.
We check, and he sets a price, then we call, and we see what happens.
Maybe half the pot, too, is what I would bet, too. I'm not sure if I'd bet two-thirds here. I don't know. I don't know about a check, though. If nothing's changed, why are we going to control the pot? We love our hand.
I guess nothing's changed, but what information did we get on the flop?
Just a call.
Yeah.
Hearts, though.
Could be anything, right?
Right. So you want to put the hammer down, too.
Well, that's true.
If you think he's drawing. A call would indicate that he could be drawing, so you've gotten a little bit of information, if that's how you want to read it.
Kind of a loose call with a pair on the board for a hard draw, isn't it?
Well, I can't always worry about a boat. I would still go for my hearts. If I had ace, king of hearts here, I'm going to call. Just because there's a pair on the board, I'm not worried about a boat. Now, if I bet, I got to get some information.
All right, so there we go. We talked it out. So, yeah, it's probably worth a bet.
Yeah, so let's bet. I'm going to bet 50 to 65, somewhere in there.
All right. Sounds good to me.
All right.
Here it says, a classic poker situation. My friend bets out 45, and the villain raises to 100.
Now, here's the deal. If you had quads and you had somebody betting into you and you have position, why are you raising?
Not raising, right?
Right? I mean, why? Why are you raising here? Because he's hoping you have aces and you're going to shove? I mean, you got another streak to get that accomplished. Why are you doing it now? Because now you're putting a doubt in his hand. If he only had ace-king or if he was bluffing at you, you might give him one more streak to try that. And if not, then you can make your value bet. If you're raising here and he has nothing, he's going to fold. He might hit his ace on the turn. I mean, on the river, I mean, and then really be emboldened to bet into you. So, if he had ace-king or something like that, or if he had pocket aces, he could make aces full of nines on the end, and you'd really get all of his money. So, why would you raise now?
How about this as a misdirection?
I know, but you're losing...
The raise is not dramatic.
You're losing a chance at that $600.
Minimum raise, so...
It's so fishy. It's so... To me...
Right, but see, you've already decided this guy can't have the nine because he raised you, right? Isn't that a perfect reason to raise with a 9?
Well, I mean, I'm not the average 1-2 player either.
All right, but...
I'm just saying, it's taking... When you have quads, you're taking an awful chance to get this guy who raised preflop and then continuation bet.
You get the possibility that you're up against aces here, and aces isn't going to go anywhere, right?
Right, so get him on the next street. when well, he can
yeah,
even
but aces aren't going to fold your raise here, right? Probably not even kings. Queens might have to think about it.
Right, but there are a lot of hands that would see that min raise and say, oh, man, you know, and then fold because he was trying to steal the pot, didn't get there, but now you give him one more street to improve with quads. Why anybody who has quads, unless you're positive this guy has that, why would you want to scare him off when you have one street left where he's still out of position, he still has to bet first. And if he checks to you, and then he's checking
right,
for
all right,
pot control,
but you're,
then
all right, let's think about it this way. If we bet out here, and we got tens now, so we know what we have, right?
Right.
We bet out here now, and we get called by the villain. What do we do on the river?
Oh.
You're not going to be tempted to slow down now on the river with tens? This guy's called us both times.
Maybe.
Especially now with the turn, with as you mentioned, now it makes the hard draw really, really fishy or really dicey.
Right, but I'm also
at this point I have to give him the credit for having a pair at that point.
Well,
the min raise though.
You know, it's like if he had quads, why is he doing even? Why is he doing the tricky min raise thing?
Right. So I guess what my point is in asking you that question is that this could be a value raise here because if you just call the 40. If you're the villain, you just call the 45, and then your opponent checks on the river, and you put out whatever bet, and he folds. You've just lost value. Here, if you min raise, or essentially what is a min raise here, you might get him to call that and get a little bit more money out of him in case he decides to shut down his hand when he doesn't improve on the river.
Hmm.
It's not like we're raising to like 200 here.
Yeah, I don't know. See, a lot of people would see the min raise as, you know, dying for a call. And then you'll have to reassess. You know, if you just call this guy,
it's a mid-race. You're dying for a call, and you made it cheap enough that someone's like, all right, fine. There's still a street left. Still a street left to improve. If we're up against, and I'm not saying you would do this, but if you're up against jacks, queens, kings, or aces here, you still got two outs to beat them, right?
All right, well, what hand min raises there?
But on the river, you don't. After that, your hand's done, so you know at this point.
As pocket tens, we have to wonder. We have shown strength the entire way, and on top of it, we've bet every street, and now somebody's min-raised us. What hands are confident to min-raise on that turn?
Right, hands that have us beat.
Hands that have us beat. So why would someone want to do that and scare us?
Because it's 1-2.
Oh, okay, now you can bring that out, but you couldn't before.
No, you can't. Now it's 1-2. Somebody goes, it's only going to be $55 left, and maybe I'll hit my 10, or maybe this guy is just making a move on me.
And we also have to remember that both players here have 600 in front of them, so it's not like it's $30.
What I'm saying is the villain's thought process at this point, and we don't know what the hand is yet, but right. If he has one of those big hands that we're talking about, his thought process is, hey, this guy still has hope that he can catch something. So I need to get some value out of him now before all hope is gone on the river. And he decides that he's got to be crushed.
If he's convinced we have a big pair and he has quads, I can see the min raise because he knows the aces aren't going to go anywhere now or kings or something. But if he knew we had – because also if it was something like he could also change this sort of subtlety that you're trying to play here and make it seem like – if he just calls, he can make it feel like he has eights or sevens, and he doesn't really believe us, and that's why he's calling it down, because now he's got a full house, you know, nines full of eights. And so that can make the other person think that you have an under pair, but it's still a good pair that's bigger than fours. And so you can play the subtlety game either way, and so now that min-raise could make this guy think, embolden him, and so he's going to... So, I mean, there's two ways to look at this min-raise, so it just depends on which way you look at it.
I
just feel like...
All right, so you're folding now, I guess is what I'm saying, right?
No. I'm not sure. What I'm saying is, if somebody makes that min raise...
You're just saying, why is he raising here?
What I'm saying is, if he's making that min raise, it's hard to put
you're
him on quads.
It's hard to put him on a better hand.
You right, it's hard to put him on quads.
And he's doing the old post-o kind of bluff thing here, where, you know, hey, it's a min raise, so I got it. Get out of my pot.
Yeah. It's really hard to put him on quads.
All right, I get it. Which is all the more reason to do it then, right?
Because if he had aces or something bigger earlier, he would have made a re-raise before he even got to the flop. Or
all right, so in that scenario, then you have to re-raise here then, don't you?
Well, if you want to do the pot control thing, you could probably call and then check call. you know, providing he's not going to 600.
I didn't do that. He bet out 45. Now he's raising 100. Now you're saying that because he's raising here, you're fairly confident that you haven't beat, which if that's the case, then you should probably raise, right?
Well, no. If the word fairly is in my thought process, I can call and check call at the end and still be happy with this pot. He's not going to put in all 600 on the river.
All right, so here's the thing. So what percentage do you think that you are ahead right now?
I mean, I would probably put it at 80%, 75%, something like that, right, that I'm ahead.
And you wouldn't, when you feel like you're an 80% favorite, you wouldn't raise?
Well,
That 20%'s got you so scared that you're not going to raise it?
It's not as if I'm saying I know I have aces versus 7-8 preflop, and I have five cards to come. This is, I've gotten more information as I went along. I had 80% chance that I could be ahead, but if I'm wrong, I'm risking 600 instead of, you know, a preflop raise.
Right. So then it's more like a 60-40, 50-50 then, right?
No, I don't think I don't bet all of my money based on percentages in my mind. I bet on what's the right thing to do here. Just because I'm up 80%, there's still a 2% chance, I'm 20% chance I'm wrong. I think that I'm still happy with the size of this pot if I check call here and then check call the river, I mean.
All right, so then let me ask you this then. What's the best way to maximize value out of this hand? If you're not going to raise here, what's going to happen is you're going to bet out on the river, right?
No, I'm going to check the river.
It's the same thing that we're talking
check
about.
Call.
Well, if you're going to check call and he's got nothing, he's not going to bet. So now this is the last amount of money you're going to get out of his hand then if you're not going to raise.
If I'm still, you know, that's the thing too, is you just don't know.
See, this goes back to what I was talking about before. Everybody's still got an option on the river to improve here. So even if this guy is bluffing with something that could improve, if you raise him, again, unless you make it crazy, he's really got to think hard about calling because he's still got an option and there's a lot of money in the pot now. So
really,
both of you are trying to get value out of this hand somehow, and I think this is where you get it. If you go to the river, I think either side of this, depending on what he has, is going to lose value. This is the value street in this hand, I think.
I'm wondering if that 100 is the value. I mean, if you have 600 in front of you and you're going to make 150
on hand. Well, that's what I'm saying, but you're saying you're 80% sure that he doesn't have anything because he wouldn't make this raise. So therefore, it's time for you to get value out of this hand.
I guess I'm reevaluating the jacks possibility, too. You know what I mean? I'm wondering if Jax is a possible hand.
Meanwhile, somebody's calling clock on us at the table here.
I know. I think that I'm just calling, and I'm at the point, up to this point, he has not given me any reason to think he's ahead of me. Now he's given me a reason to think about it, so instead of shoving, I might call and reassess on the river. I might watch his response to the card. I might think it might be a card I can represent. It might be something I think he improves on, but doesn't beat me. I don't know. I might want to see that river card without just shoving it all in and seeing that nine get turned over and laugh. You know what I mean? So,
well, I'm not saying you would shove here. I mean, we got
I know, but I mean, you're up to 100.
Started, right?
What are you gonna do? Make it 150?
I mean, 200. Then raise his min raise.
So now you've committed. What, three? If you do that, you've committed more than half your stack to this hand.
No, 250. So it'll be about half, yeah.
And then if he re-raises me again.
Also, but I'm saying this is not how I play it. I'm just playing it the way you're telling me you would play it. And you're telling me you're 80% sure you're going to have it.
I said 75, 80. No, but really, I mean, again, the amount of percentage in my mind that I think I'm ahead doesn't always mean I'm going to raise. It just means that I'm going to calling.
I'm going to say, if you're going to decide to call here, your only option on the river is to check call.
Yeah, that's what I said.
There's absolutely no way you could bet out on that river.
No, I didn't think I was going to. And I don't have a problem check calling, because if he's willing to min raise on a turn, if he's behind, he's going to probably try to bluff at it on the river. If he's ahead, he's going to bet too. So either way, this guy's betting, I think.
Hmm. I know.
Right? I don't know. I just because I'm in my head. Let me ask you this. Are you telling me that every single time, in any situation that you think you're ahead, you're betting? If it's 80% in your mind? No matter what?
80%? Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe I shouldn't have made it that high. It's just that it's...
I mean, that's a bad scenario because, you know, if I've just, you know, crushed the deck, you know, and I, like, if I flop quads, right? Obviously, I know I'm 100% at that point, which doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to bet.
Right.
Probably am. But this is a different story now. I mean, now we've bet out twice, got called once, and now we've got essentially min raise. It's a different scenario.
All right, I wouldn't say it was 50-50 then. That's the one thing. I think I'm more likely ahead than not. So I don't think it's 50-50 for me. Maybe 60-40.
Right. So now if you're saying 60-40, then I can justify just a call here.
Yeah.
Because now there's a 40% chance that you're behind. He's going to re-raise you on top of your re-raise.
Yeah.
That's going to be trouble.
Yeah. I'm in the position.
I think that's fair, too, because, again, jacks, queens, kings, aces, and nine have us beat. I mean, no one raised us pre-flop, so makes some of those hands unlikely.
That's why I think the jacks hand is the only other hand that's not a nine that might be possible, because re-raise pre-flop, and a lot of people don't re-raise with jacks, they call and assess.
Exactly.
So, but queens, I think they're going to re-raise with. So, okay, so there's two hands
now.
Jacks, that I think
nine, or a hand we can beat.
Right. So that puts me at like 65, 35, 60, 40, something like that in my mind. So I think it's worth a call of this min raise and then a check call on the end. As long as it's not some shove at the end, then I don't know what to do. I'd probably fold.
Okay. All right. Our hero, remember, he is his friend playing this. So our hero tells his friend at this point that I'm folding, because what's the point? I'm going to expect a big bet on the river if I call, and it's not worth tangling with the other big stack at the table who's a good player when there are enough donkeys on the table to deal with. Interesting point, actually.
Yeah.
But his friend decides to call the raise.
Yeah, I don't think I would fold. I mean, I might be done with my aggression, but I don't think I'm folding. There's so much money out there, and this guy has to have a very specific two hands to beat me, and I think that's worth tangling a little more. You know, if the guy shoves on the end, and I check to him, if he bets 100, I think I can afford 100 when I started with 2. And I have 6 in front of me, and now I have 5. You know, I mean, if I have to, I have to. That's a big pot.
But if
it's
he's
a pretty
bluffing
big hand.
Here, he's definitely going to shove, right?
If what?
If he's bluffing now?
I don't know. I don't know if he's bluffing, he's going to shove.
Is he
going to really risk
his
entire
nines?
Stack? You know? I don't think he bluffs his whole stack.
I think a shove is very unlikely, no matter what he has on the river.
Yeah.
Because if he has anything less than a 9, then he has to be concerned about
us having a 9.
Right, or aces, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So shoving seems weird. I suppose if he has the 9 and just thinks, hey, this guy won't go away, so he's going to call anything. Now my show looks like I missed again. I'm just trying to buy the pot.
All right, so...
Sometimes, but for the most part, it's probably unlikely to see a shove on the river, I think.
And you would have called, right? You were only basing the whole raise thing on my percentages.
I feel like there's a decent enough shot that I'm still ahead here that it's worth this call to check the river and even call a reasonable bet. Now, if he shoves, this is where it gets tricky, because now in my mind I'm thinking a shove is weakness. I really should call it, but I'm not sure I'm going to want to.
Yeah, because that's...
But I'm thinking more likely what's going to happen here is I'm going to call this 55 check, and he's going to bet 100.
Yeah, or 150 or something, right. I mean, I think I can justify a call here if that's what he does. If he shoves, then I don't know what I'll do. I really don't know if I'm going to put 600 out there for tens. As Daniel Negron has said, it's just tens. You know, you do lose to jacks, which is a very plausible hand here. You do lose to a 9, which, you know, 8-9 is a plausible hand in one of these types of games. 9-10, even though it's less likely it's a 10 because we have two of them, but those are hands, suited ace-9, those are hands that are plausible. So, all right, so anyway, he called the raise, right?
Yes. All right, so here's my next question before we get the river. So, if the villain does have the 9, if you're the villain and you have the 9, what do you bet on the river when we check to you?
I'm value betting, so if there's, let's see, there's 100, 200, 300, it's about 300 a pot, I'm probably betting like 200.
All right.
200, 150, 175, something like that. Maybe just 100 just to get it out there, because it's, you know, people always like to bet the percentage amounts that they do in tournaments and stuff, but when you're in a cash game, a lot of times a stack of red looks like enough. You know, you just grab it and put it out there. You don't bet 200 or 250 unless it's really a big pot or something, so... That's my experience in these 1-2 games. So, I don't know. Somewhere between 100 and 200, I guess.
All right. So, regardless of what the villain has, we're expecting a bet between 150 and 200.
Yeah, probably.
Right? And you fold the 200 but call 150 if you hit the tens?
I probably call.
Calling me that.
I'm probably calling either one.
Right,
because I still have, I still have 300 in front of me, which means I probably am up for 100 for the night, and it's a hand that I, you know, and again, these are the tools of my trade. I can't look at it like I just lost a car payment. I have to look at it like, okay, this is a hand that I played. Maybe I play it differently next time, who knows, but right now, there are only two hands that I can really put this guy on that beat me, and a raise preflop could eliminate one of them, so it could just be jacks that I'm up against, so I don't know if that's the only one hand. If I have all this money in the pot and I'm really only narrowing it down to one possible hand, I just it's hard to do that and not call. So I'm going to call. Oh, it depends. I don't know what this guy's going to do anyway. But plus, I don't know if we even bet out. Who knows?
All right. The river's the jack of spades. I don't know why the spades count as much. I don't know the suits for anything else. But final board is 4999 jack.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we already confirmed that we're checking now, I think. I can't imagine betting out.
Yeah, this just makes it.
And it improves better. Nothing, because even if the guy had jacks, it just makes him jacks full of nines, and we were still losing the nines full of jacks anyway, so it doesn't change our position, really.
All right, here it says, in my mind, this is a decent spot for a blocking bet and hope the villain just calls, and if he raises, fold.
Nah, I don't know about that. Why did he min raise if you're
villain's been pretty strong the whole day.
And now you're betting out when the jack comes? Raising.
Yeah. I think any kind of bet here is just begging for a re-raise.
If anything...
And if we're planning to fold, then why do it?
If anything, betting here now makes it look like you had pocket jacks and improved to jacks full of nines. If this guy has a nine, now he's going to think you're even more emboldened to call a raise. Yeah. There's no way I'm betting the street now after what just transpired. I'm just checking.
Yeah, and if he has anything lesser, like he had eights maybe, and now we bet on the jacks, then he's got to feel like he's dead, right?
Yeah, and then he would fold.
If we check, then he might still feel like he's good.
Yeah, or he might just be willing to check it down, and then you're taking out a... You know what I mean? It's no matter what, you're going to be sick about calling a bet here. I don't think you're going to be happy about having to call a bet. So if you check, he might check behind. If you bet, he may fold, but if he has an inferior hand. But you're taking too much of a risk here to lose his pot to someone now shoving to you if you put out 75 or 100. And then what do you do? Now you've lost 100 for nothing, and you're not going to call. So I'm just checking.
Okay. Our hero says, however, my friend checks, and the villain puts out a poultry bet of 70.
70?
70 chickens, apparently.
It's yeah, poultry. I'm calling.
Poultry bet there, Steve, sorry.
I'm calling. I'm happy to call that 70.
Yeah, 70 bucks is a dream, right?
Yeah. So,
you know, hey, take all my money. Take all 70 of my dollars.
Yeah, here you go. Here's 70.
So he says, this screams call or fold, which is a perfect bet. I don't think anybody's going to fold for 70 here. Deep side calls. Villain turns over ace, nine offsuit for the quads.
Oh, it's offsuit, too. That's the bad part. I was thinking it'd be ace, nine suited would make sense, but yeah. Ace, nine off. Jeez. Well, I'm glad we only lost that 70 in the end. He probably could have got another 100 out of me.
Well, I think, as we said, he probably could have got another 130 out of us.
Yeah.
Maximum.
Yeah.
That was a weak bet there.
So that's really, you know, I mean, like I said, I think that's probably the minimum you can lose unless you fold the turn. And I just don't know if I can fold to that min raise there. I knew the min raise. And to me, how can you make a min raise with quads there? You just call one more street. And then when that jack comes, you know, I mean, I guess maybe he loses us if we check the river and then he bets. Now we believe he has the jack because he was just calling all the way. Maybe he's calling with hearts or something.
Yeah, so I'm saying there's no value there.
There's no value, yeah.
I think he had to do what he did there.
It's just so weird. I'm so used to when I know I have the nuts that can't lose at all. You know, I tend to not, you know, just put any kind of pressure on the person. Especially if I'm in position. I can give them another street to bet into with their confidence. If he has aces or bluff, you know, and... there's just so many reasons to not bet there. And he got the most out of us, I guess. Because I don't know. I don't know if I would have had to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder how many of our listeners would have folded to that $70 river bet. I mean, it seems almost sure to us, but it's as Steve meant to say, a paltry bet. So it was screaming, you know, please call.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know. I'm
what had we raised on the turn, we would have raised more than the $70. So in that sense, we lost as close to the minimum as we possibly
could. I think so. I mean, if you revisit the hand pre-flop, obviously the ace-nine is not re-raising us. After that flop, he's got three nines. He might consider betting there. I know there's a little bit of a lesson from, and it's not the same lesson, but from Super System, where if somebody raises pre-flop and you flop trips or set, you're supposed to bet into them or raise them because they're supposed to have a hand pre-flop. So if you bet and raise into them, they're supposed to want to come over the top of you because they're supposed to have a big hand here and be willing to get some in with you. But this day and age, it's a little different in a 1-2 game. It's not a real game that, you know, Brunson was talking about here. So maybe that's the right way to go. So a lot of guys do that. They'll just call with their trips. But when you improve to quads and now you bet, that takes a lot of courage to, or at least confidence in your opponent that's going to come along. You know, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could bet that turn like that. I think I would just call and then give him a chance to even improve even more, make a 10 on the end, or bet into me again one more time, or just call that $70 bet. Because if he called the $70, if he called the 50 min raise, he would have called the 70, so he probably would have called 100 on the end or 150.
Yeah, I guess that's the other option. If you just call the 45 on a turn, then to get the same amount of value, you're going to have to bet 115 bucks, which is probably going to get called.
Yeah.
That's an odd bet, too, so you're probably going to make it 125, 150. So I guess it's possible to get more out of them if you do that. But at that point, then with the 10, with our 10s, we may not call that now, right? Because the jack's there.
Yeah, the jack's there. That's the thing. You run the risk of an overcard. But you don't know he has 10s. He raised preflop. He could have very easily had aces there the whole time.
Right, but he could also have queens and a king could come, too.
Right, yep. So
you know, so you don't know. So
you are running a risk. How about you? Do you have that ace nine? Do you make that bet on the... Do you play it any differently?
So. That's what I'm saying. I think that's my value streak.
I feel like because it's so limit, rare, that's one thing.
It's so rare to have limit. Quads. People never want to believe it, right? At a 1-2, we're not talking, you know, even though I don't think people are going to believe it. I think you're going to get that call. I would probably raise even more than the min. I might have made that 150 or something to get a shot. Because people just aren't going to believe it.
So you think they're just trying to rep it rather than have it? Yeah. Or not believe that you even have it.
So really, the only risk there is not that they... I don't think they're going to believe that you have the nine, but they might think that you have aces or kings. But then they're going to think back to the beginning of the hand and say, hey, you didn't raise.
Yeah.
So that doesn't seem likely. So the guy's just making a move on the pot. So I'm getting value because my hand is super disguised.
Yeah.
People just aren't going to believe that I have anything that could beat them here.
Huh.
And I think I'm just making a move on it. And then I get the value there, and then... you know, maybe they raise, and then once somebody raises here, now you got to re-raise, right? And you're probably going to lose them, but that's fine.
Right.
And that's great. And then if they call here, though, you know, then you just... I wouldn't have bet 70 on the end. I would have bet more there. But still, yeah, absolutely. I think the turn was the value streak for both hands here. I mean, it just turned out that he had a much better hand than we did.
Wow. Well, I didn't think this hand was going to be that interesting when I first started talking about it, but it got really difficult at the end there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm glad you made it a hand of the week. Because we usually just diss situations, let them go through their little thing, and then talk about them. But this needed a street-by-street analysis, I think. So this is tough. Thanks, Steve. All right. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.